This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Well, 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 good morning and welcome back to the iHealth channel and iHealth Radio. Hurricane H is in the house and we're going to go to a journey today on the Garrison Show. Now, you're going to be like wondering, like, what is that? Well, about a couple of weeks back, we had a guest and we talked about Gracia Cantantes, which was a book. And the guest was Gabriel Garrison. Now, Gabriel Garrison has joined us for a series of topics of discussion that will be very interesting to you. And you will probably be like, wow, it's mind-blowing stuff. It's really concept that you might think about or might not think about, but it will give you a whole different light and an angle and a perception of things. So we decided to have the Garrison Show going forward, or the Garrison Hour going forward for the next few weeks. So look forward to those, probably Fridays and Saturdays. That's where the scheduled shows will take place. So that being said, so Gabriel, welcome back.
Good morning, and thank you for having me back. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show with me in the wings here.
Well, today is yours, actually.
Thank you.
Today is all yours. I'm stepping back, and it's all you now.
yes.
So Gabriel, we've had a great moment last week or 2 weeks ago, and we got a lot of good feedback on the book and the content and discussion we had about the gratitude and all that good stuff, and then we talked after, and we had a very interesting discussion as well. And for our audiences, I mean, if you're listening or watching, do catch the old the other show on YouTube, on the radio, download the app, or on Facebook, our channel, go to the site. There's so many places you can actually listen, or the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, you name it. But do take a minute and listen to that show. You'll be very intrigued about it if you haven't heard it yet or listened to it yet. But today, we're taking you to a journey of concepts, and today we're going to talk about the power of thinking, right, Gabriel?
Yes, absolutely. Thinking is a very interesting process, and you and I discussed last time about the 50-10-40 percent model, which creates our experience in life. So the 50% goes to the 50% genetic influence in our lives. 10%, interestingly enough, goes to the outside factors in our lives. And a big 40% goes to our perception or thinking process. And the benefit about this 40% is that short of traumatic brain injuries or other sort of thinking disabilities or inabilities, this thinking process is 100% in our control. So Hurricane and I decided to delve a little bit into the process of thinking and see how reflecting on it may be of assistance to us in our daily lives. So, Hurricane, if what is to you, if I may ask, the process of thinking?
Well, I was going to ask the same thing.
Okay. Go for it.
Let's go for that. So, well, I was going to say is that, you know, it is odd. I mean, everybody knows that we think.
Right? Yes.
You know, and, you know, I think, therefore I am, whatever, you know, the actual, you know, quote is. But the idea is, you know, like, why do we have to talk about thinking? And, you know, like, what the hell is the process of thinking, right? Well, yes, everybody's thinking. I mean, we all think about stuff. Thinking is, you know, it's a reflex that we've grown with, apparently, right? And sometimes we do it without even thinking. It just,
yes,
as ironic as it sounds.
Yes. And it's a very powerful statement, really. So we have really two kinds of thinking processes. One is the functional thinking, and the other one is the dysfunctional thinking. What do you think would be an example of functional thinking?
Well, when you think about something that you're going to act on, right? I'm assuming.
Yes. And so acting in functional thinking is for the purpose of helping us progressing in life. And that's why we call it functional. So what would be an example of functional thinking? It's something that helps me improve myself. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, again, you have to, you know, I guess, feed yourself.
Yes.
Be healthy.
Yes. So there are four outcomes really out of the process of thinking. One is the kind of thinking that helps us progress in life. The other one would be the kind of thinking that helps us maintain our being and having values in life. The third one is a kind of thinking that actually moves us into stagnating in life. And the fourth category would be the kind of thinking that pushes us towards regressing in life. And of course, the last three are part of the dysfunctional kind of thinking, right? And this kind of dysfunctional thinking can be an insidious or an overt kind of thinking that may be evident or not so evident, and will address the various forms in which either manifests in life. So in terms of dysfunctional thinking, I would like to just go briefly over some of these sorts of modes in which dysfunctional thinking is being reflected. One of them is the all or nothing thinking, my way or the highway, right? We all know that if we drive with that attitude on the highway, we are liable to get in trouble.
We'll get in trouble, period.
Period. Another kind of dysfunctional thinking would be the should. You should do this. I should do this. Why is that dysfunctional? Because that should is a command that is coming out of the ego. And if it is not functionally based, that should is actually both dysfunctional and destructive in life. Other kinds of examples are catastrophizing, right? Oh, you know, of course it should happen to me. That's I'm expecting this. I have no control. Fear, fear-based thinking, which actually leads one to being angry, and then from there on, God help us, right? In terms of what one says and does. Overgeneralizing is another way of dysfunctional thinking. Why? Because each individual has, yes, his or her commonalities and also his or her generalities. So by overgeneralizing, right, stereotyping is a good example of that. We can get, it's dysfunctional because it's not based on reality. And that's a misperception that's going to get us in trouble, right? Minimizing or maximizing dysfunctional are example of dysfunctional thinking, right? we have examples of false modesty. Oh, thank you for doing this for me. Oh, it was nothing, right? Maximizing would be, oh, you should be grateful to me. About 20 years ago, I let you use my car for the interview, and now you have a great job, right? Personalizing is an example of dysfunctional thinking because it creates an egocentric view of the world, right? The world turns around me, and if somebody, say, pushes me in the subway, oh, he doesn't respect me. Maybe that person didn't see me. Maybe that person basically was worried about something happening in his or her life. Maybe it was too much, there were too many people in the subway. So if I make it personal, then I'm going to go into the attack mode when really, again, it's a misperception of the reality. Jumping to conclusions, right? Know it all, do it all. That all is the problem because, right, only God knows it all, we should say. Other examples are labeling, defeatism, also called learned helplessness, and denial, right? So what do you think would be the problem with denying a reality, Hurricane?
Well, I would think that's actually, I call it the ostrich effect. There is something going on, and you just, because you don't want to think about it and you just avoid it, or you just kind of, just almost eliminate it from your brain, like it's not happening, but the reality is still there. So it's really, that's what I literally refer to as the ostrich effect. You put your head in the sand and expect that danger is going to pass. So, it's really, ignoring reality or just not facing it.
Yes. And this is the problem, isn't it? Just because I ignore the fact that I need to pay the rent, it's not going to go away. So we have several kinds. Yeah, I'm sorry, go on.
No. So Gabriel, it's funny because that is what you've described about dysfunctional thinking right now. I think a lot of us live in that world, unfortunately.
Yes.
I think that is, we don't realize it, but whatever you're describing here, I think that most of us, and if not all of us, we sometimes, without even realizing it, that we are stuck into those things. And because we get all these influences and we are really reactive to it, and somehow that's how we live.
Yes.
So literally, you're highlighting something that we might not have thought about in the past or realize as a behavior. But I think hearing you right now is like, whoa, hold on, aha, there's a problem here.
Yes. Absolutely, yeah, and denial is an insidious little beast because we can deny several things. We can deny the facts, right? Oh no, it's not raining outside. We can deny intentions, right? Somebody brought me a Christmas gift. He only does it because I'm his supervisor, right? I can deny the damage, or I can deny the responsibility. Now imagine that what we are talking about here in terms of denial, it's referring to a victim, and then the abuser is caught, and then what will the abuser do, right? He or she, because it happens both ways, right, will deny that he or she hurt somebody. Oh, I didn't do it. And then you can show the proofs, right? Medical exam, photographs, video cameras, and then the abuser will go from denying the facts, will deny the intention. Oh, yes, you know, I slapped that person, but I really, it was just in jest. Yeah, it was just, my intention was just to be playful, I didn't, Then you can say, okay, what's next? Well, even if my intention was bad, then I, the abuser, let's say, would deny the damage. Oh, I hurt that person. That was the fact. The intention was to get that person intimidated, but the damage was not so bad. So what if she broke three ribs? It's not like blood and guts were coming outside, right? And the last kind of denial is the responsibility, right? Oh, I did all the above. At the same time, really, it's not my responsibility because I was too mad. She got me too angry. And it's her fault because she got me so angry. So in addition to denying, the abusers use this strategy of thinking, again, They may think it's functional, but it's really dysfunctional because it circumvents reality. And in so doing, it creates imaginary world in their mind, which eventually will lead them into troubling of some sort of another. So we spoke about denial. So the abuser will deny all of the above. Sometimes they will minimize the damage. And then the last will be blaming the victim. So these are examples that people can do. And Hurricane, I wanted here to bring all this to the attention of the individual in terms of himself or herself. Because a lot of people, like you said before, will deny the harm they do. They will minimize the harm they do to themselves, and usually starts from the self. They will sometimes blame themselves minimally or somebody else. So they will not focus on the functional thinking, which is, let me see what the reality is and let me see how I can progress in life best from here. What do you think?
Well, it's pretty crazy. The way I'm thinking about it is this. It's the same as when someone lies and they believe in their lies and they really think that's the truth. I think that's the same reality here where someone living in a life that is fictional, but it's only in their mind. But then they almost portray that and then they project that in the actual life and affect everybody, including themselves primarily, and everybody around them. I think I'm that's where I am falling right now in terms of the ideology.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So then what is the process, the real process of thinking, right? And like you said, that process which makes us function in life. So in English, thinking and thinking are synonymous. If I can think, I have to think. It's the same root, same origin. Why? Because if I can think, I understand. So the term understanding is actually an old term in the Masons or builders language, where when they would build a bridge or a temple, the good architect would have to go and stand under the foundation to make sure that the foundation, right, the most important thing in an edifice, is leveled, is square, is strong, and so forth. So the same goes for our lives, really. If I want to know what's going on with me, I have to understand or stand under what is it that gets me to be and feel and think and act a certain way. So the idea is that if I think I understand, and if I understand, I understand that there is such an enormous confluence of gifts given to me in terms of life, of health, of freedom, that I cannot buy but be thankful about all these gifts. Thank you, right? To establish it in English comes from thinking. In Italian and Spanish, we have gracias, gracias, which means grace, right? Goes back to the title of my book, Gracia, grace. The French call it merci, or in English, mercy, right? Again, grace, obrigado in Portuguese. I'm obligated for all these gifts that come to me. The Romanians go all the way by saying mulțumesc, mulțumești. You mean a lot to me, right? In the Semitic languages, right? Hebrew, Arabic, what do we have? Salam, shalom, right? And what does that mean?
Well, peace, pretty much. That's
Yeah, right.
Generic one.
There's right. There is more to it. So peace means what? Homeostasis, right? Things that allow me to be the way I am, to be afloat, to move on in life, right? So how do I do that, right? There are several ways of thinking, and this here we come to the initial introduction that you had on this subject. So if I think consciously, what does that mean, Hurricane, if I think consciously?
Well, that means I'm pretty much actively, you know, using my brain to do a certain particular function. I'm thinking about it, you know, actively, and I'm planning it. It's not like it's just a reaction or just a spur of the moment type of thing. It's actually something that's with intent.
Exactly. So the capacity to make conscious decisions is one of those capacities which are human. A lot of animals make instinctive decisions. The conscious thinking is a decision that's logical or and also could be emotional, but when it's conscious, it's a sort of guided emotion, if you will. A conscious decision is the one that allows us to make short-term, medium-term, or long-term decision based on what you said, consequential thinking, right? So in other words, I'm fully responsible for what I'm doing because I'm aware about what I'm doing and why I take that decision.
I think that's the key word, awareness. It's not just a reaction or reflex, it's really you are planning and conscious and aware that this is the action I need to do. And I think to your point, that's what makes us different. And we're not, you know, in the animalistic, you know, world. I mean, we're humans, right?
That yes.
Elevate us in terms of, you know, I guess the aptitude.
Yeah. And you said something that was very wise earlier. And you said, unfortunately, we use a lot of dysfunctional thinking, which is at the opposite of functional thinking. And that's not conscious thinking, is it?
No. Well, it is in a way, right? I mean, because some people, it's a matter of belief, right? It's dysfunctional, but you still believe in it. It's just that your reality is wrong.
Exactly. So it's conscious thinking without it being really lucid thinking, without being fact-based, right? And very often this sort of, and people can swear it's conscious thinking, right? It's actually a subconscious kind of thinking, right? So what would be your definition of subconscious thinking?
Well, you know, now we go deep. You know, I mean, it's funny because like hypnosis, right? I mean, I've tried hypnosis personally, and I've challenged it, and I've tested it, and I know it works. And, you know, I give the example of road hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Everybody's experienced that, which is basically you're driving, you're talking, and before you know it, you get to your destination. Because you've memorized that road, whatever, that's an example. But then subconsciously, sometimes, you know, you're thinking about something, I'm talking to you, and I might just state a word that I was thinking about that I didn't even intend to say because my mind was already in that realm. And so those are some of the ways I can pretty much define them. Obviously, you're the expert, so.
Yes.
I try.
No, this is good. So, The big difference between conscious thinking, where I am aware of my thinking and why I'm doing something, is that subconscious thinking, during the subconscious process of thinking, we are aware what we are doing, but we are not aware why. And that's why they call it subconscious, under the conscious. Level. And this is because subconscious thinking is based a lot on our past experiences and, like you said, personal beliefs. So they are not necessarily related to reality, the reality of the day, if you will. And at the same time, they are the kind of thinking that I think it's right because I've seen it before. And I think that because it happened, it is also applicable today. So this is a big dissection between reality and which is objective in nature, and past experiences, which are definitely subjective in nature, right? So where do we learn subconscious thinking, right? We learn it from the experiences of the past, which have created a belief system, which then guides us in terms of interpreting the reality based on that. So a good example would be, let's say that my parents and my grandparents and my wife and everybody around me, when I say I want to shave, they give me a mirror, one of those carnival mirrors that makes me look 4 feet one. Even if I'm 7 feet seven, it still makes me look 4 feet one. So when it comes to me, regardless of the reality which is in me, I will perceive myself, that's the subconscious thinking, in terms of being 4 feet one. If I come from an aggressive family, then I'm going to assume that parents and really the world is going to be aggressive. If I'm taught to function out of fear, I'm going to assume that that's the way to do it, whether the reality is such or not, right? And that's the subconscious kind of thinking where really our past experiences and our past beliefs guide the way. Interestingly enough, about 65% of our decisions are based at the subconscious level. Isn't that interesting?
It is, and I was gonna just, you know, relate to marketing. The power of marketing, it's all suggestive and it's all geared to your subconscious. You see stuff over and over and over, and before you know it, you will do compulsive buy-in of things, and or you will relate to something. Like a good example, we talk about, you know, diapers. We don't call them diapers, we call them Pampers. But, you know, because the power of the company's marketing over the years, we call Coke, you know, which is basically soda, right? You know,
right.
But those are standard things. I mean, sometimes cigarettes, you know, Marlboros, because they just happen to be the first ones or the more. So those are some of the examples, you know, that you automatically would relate to in terms of subconsciously you react to it based on what you've been suggested over time.
Over time.
I mean, it's really just see it, hear it. Before you know it, you just know, like, how do I even know that?
But yeah.
It's a little there, and now you react to it. I mean, again, yeah. That's just one of the ways I can relate to it, because it does impact people. And that's really why people are crazy. I mean, everything, people spend a lot of money on things that they might not even need. I might be guilty to some of that level myself. But that's because you see stuff. I mean, unless you really use active thinking and you're like, wait a minute, why do I need this? And you start rationalizing, you know, using some rational, you know, thinking there, it doesn't happen. You just react to it and that's it.
Yeah, subconscious is a big comfort sort of thinking because it is the thought of the known, the thought of the familiar, right? Let me take the old shoes because they look raggedy and dusty and old, and at the same time they're so comfortable. So that comfort level in thinking is the appealing part of it, right? The reflex aspect. I don't have to think so much. I'm just going to do it just because. Right. So that because can get us in a lot of trouble because it doesn't reflect to necessarily to the reality. And then it creates what it's called a cognitive dissonance and a difference between the reality and us. Right. It's a problem. And we need to be aware about that. So I have to ask myself when I do a conscious decision, am I aware what I'm doing now and why? And if that satisfies my answer, then let me go for it. And for me to be aware of the thinking that I'm doing and the subsequent words and actions and the why, I have to use consequential thinking. You and I think are old enough to remember the videotape. Right. All right. So the whole idea with consequential thinking is to use that analogy, play the tape until the end, before you decide to buy the movie or not, right? We also call that proactive thinking. Let me think about it before I'm actually doing it. Let me look at the pros and cons. To use your example, the marketers do not want that under any circumstance. They want instinct and instant buying, right? Based on, like you said, the alluring analogies and visual and auditory and conceptual messages there, right? Where house is home and so forth. So I need to think proactively. Yes, go on.
No, I said we see that in the fitness world too. I mean, or there are some modalities that we almost like, you're fit, you got to look this way.
Yes.
That is literally true. That's not how humans technically look, but that's how we are perceiving it to be, you know, the ideal look. And that's because it's been suggested over time that, you know, there is a certain look to be a male, there's a certain look to be a female, and, you know, and that's it. So there's no in between. But
right.
Is it the truth? No. But that's really how we all see it subconsciously, like, you know, oh, that's what I want to be.
Yeah. Right, absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah, and one, sooner or later, one will have to think consciously about his or her decisions, because there will be a price to pay for it. I cannot tell you how often when I was working as a therapist in group and individual counseling, I had people who went to prison and then they were released, and part of their parole stipulations were to attend anger management and or substance abuse counseling, and that's where I was at one of these outpatient agencies. I cannot tell you how often this individual said, man, if I had played the tape before doing an action, I wouldn't have ended up in prison. And a lot of them said, guess what, once I was in prison, I had to play the tape, but it was too late. I was playing it now. Not proactively, but retroactively, and at what cost in time and money and lives and so forth. So if a decision is important, my suggestion would be for the individual to think, let me be aware of what I'm doing and why I'm doing. And if it sums up to being a good idea, then let me go for it. That means I have thought this thing through proactively. If not, if I'm going by the subconscious thinking, by instinct buying or acting or reacting, really, then I'm going to have to come to reality and with a big price. So I can make that switch from being subconscious in thinking to being conscious, either before, during, or after an action with different outcomes, isn't it? Because if I'm in the subconscious mode, I know what I want, but I don't know why. And that's a problem. So the third kind of thinking is the unconscious kind of thinking. So what would be your definition of unconscious thinking?
It's reactive. I mean, there's no, I'm not even thinking. I just like, I see something, I just buy it. Or I see something, I just do it.
Yeah.
No, yes. No consequences. You know, you don't think about the outcome, the cost, or whatever. You just behave, I guess, by impulse.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm close, but
yeah. No, good. So there is a fine division between subconscious thinking and unconscious thinking. So if in the subconscious thinking I'm aware about what I'm doing, but not why. In the unconscious thinking, I'm neither aware of what I'm doing nor why. So this is how we are when we are sleepwalking. This is when we are when do yeah go on.
No, I just said intoxicated.
Intoxicated, excellent, blacking out, crimes of passion, and it's the autopilot mode, like you said, where we are unaware of the decisions and we cannot explain why we made them. when somebody is asleep is unconscious. When somebody is in induced coma is unconscious. So one can be supposedly moving and kicking and screaming and still be unconscious when it comes to not being able why one is doing something and being even unaware of that decision. So this is also a state of mind. A lot of people who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder gravitate between the subconscious and the unconscious thinking. And it takes a lot of therapy for individuals to, again, move to the ultimate goal, which is the conscious thinking, by addressing the conflicts within, which block the individual at the logical level and either make him freeze, become aggressive, fight, or evade reality. We could call that take flight, in one, either internally or externally, right? So these two kinds of thinking, the subconscious and the unconscious, is where we need to really go into the processing mode and heal from them, because short of functional aspects of it, like when we are asleep, we don't want to be conscious, right? We want to be unconscious. And or when we write something, a novel, or revisit memories, right, where we can go into the subconscious because that's where our memories are and emotions and such. In reality, when it comes to legally bound decisions, we need to think from a conscious perspective, right?
Yep.
Right. The last one, which is not very well known or accepted, and not that that denial of it makes any difference, and at the same time, it is part of the human being's way of fighting with God, is denying that there is a supra-conscious kind of thinking, right? So if I say supra-conscious thinking, what would you think that could mean?
Which means beyond us?
Beyond us. It literally means above us, right? Supra is above us, consciousness. Subconscious is under us, right? Unconscious means no conscious at all. So the supra-conscious, you're absolutely correct, is when we think out of inspiration, right? So the word inspiration means what? Me being in the spirit, inspiration. We have contact with the higher power or consciousness or creator in the universe, to whom we have opened up and who is communicating to us. So in the supra conscious mode, we are not aware we take decisions, but we are aware why we take them. So you hear stories like, yeah, I'm sure you went through that, and when you are in martial arts, you have to go through this at some point. Anybody who's involved into any sort of work, including mathematics and physics, not just the more flimsy forms of writing poetry and novels, right? At some point, when people open up to what is it out there, if you will, inspiration comes to them, and they can write down things, and they can find out solutions and formulas which are strictly scientific, if you will, and they have no idea how it came to them. So again, we are not aware what happens to us, but we are aware why. Does that ring a bell, Hurricane?
It does. It's funny because we had that conversation last time. and it is true. I mean, you know, people always relate that I owe it to me. I did this. I came up with it. But then no one's asking the question, well, how did you come up with it? It just happened. You get an idea. Where did you get the idea from? I mean, it has to be some sort of a package delivered. It's like the Matrix, right? I did say, by the way, if you're watching and listening, I did say this is going to get deep. So we're talking a little bit of an angle that maybe people may have a little bit hard time understanding, or at least, you know, comprehending. But first of all, whether you have religion or not, I mean, there are facts that are beyond all that. And, you know, in the world of spirituality, regardless of religion, it's very common. And it is a fact. If someone reflects, and I use this exercise myself, I think about, like, you know, how did I even come up with that idea? That's the thing. We don't ask the question. And you just like, oh, I got this. Eureka, right? But that eureka aha moment happened somehow. But what was the trigger for it? Where did you get that? Did you see it somewhere a year ago, whatever? Did you think of something? Did you try to come up? Of course, you learn processes over the years. You know, you're a mathematician. You learn the basics. You become good at it. And then you go to the next one. And through trials and testing and stuff, you might be able to come up with some new stuff. But when we're talking about 100 years ago, a few hundred years back, well, they didn't have the tools that we have today. And they created the basis of what we use today. How did they come up with those things? By coincidence? I tend to believe there's no coincidence. Everything happens for a reason in a due time, and it is just the way the world works. And there are powers that are beyond our understanding. We can call them anything. We can call them, you know, spirits. We can call them, you know, in every culture, there's some sort of an actual language for them, or at least a word or description for them. But that's how I see it. And to your point, it's funny because we had a nice little discussion about this, and it gets deep. So go ahead, Gabriel, give us more.
Yes. So thank you. So in fact, let's just use the word universe. It means what? Uni means one, and verse means the verse of the poem. So if the universe is one verse, to use that etymology, that it means that there is an immense knowledge, wisdom, and we are pretty much privy to it when we open up to it. Just like, if you will, the drops of water are privy to the water, to the waves of the ocean, if they open up to it, if they are part of it. And that is what the supra conscious is. People say, well, how do I get there? Well, first of all, let me clarify. If I want to get into the supra conscious out of love, then I'm going to be on that frequency. If you remember our analogy, the FM, AM frequency, right? Sure. The love frequency is going to lead me to the love-based stations. The fear, and which triggers anger frequency, yes, it is going to get me to the supraconscious. It's going to be at the fear-based level, anger-based level, knowledge. So let me decide what I want. Do I want creative energy, or do I want destructive energy? Because that's what I'm going to get when I open up. So there are different ways to get into this extra or supraconscious, and people have used prayers, meditation, sacred drugs or plants, psychedelic drugs, music, dance, poetry, writing, painting, you name it, sports, running, martial arts, any form of reflection is going to open one up to that. If we focus awareness of our minds and our body's interactions with ourselves and with the world constantly, right? The creative energy would be the opposite of evil, right? So, and in fact, if we flip the word evil, we come up with life, life to life, and life to love, right?
Yes, so it's I enjoy the way you use the wording. And in the true English and grammatic space, find them in a way that is like, you know, okay, so how many people have thought about that?
Thank you.
Very few.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's the creative force. The destructive one is based on hate. Interestingly, hate etymologically comes from ked, get, and it really means sorrow, grief. So if somebody hates, that person is also sad. That's a very important factor to consider. One is not hateful when he or she is happy. One has to be sad before he or she becomes angry and hateful. Anger is a secondary emotion to fear, and I don't know if you remember the grieving stages, right? The first, there is the pain, then there is the trauma. Trauma leads to shock. Shock leads to denial. Denial to fear. Fear to anger. Anger leads to trying to make a compromise. And eventually, if one can use forgiveness, and that's a big one because you and I spoke about it last time, forgiveness is anti-ego, then eventually he or she can close those open wounds of resentment and turn them into scars where it doesn't hurt. They are there, but it doesn't hurt. In other words, one can find serenity. What do you think?
It takes will, and it's not easy, and it's not for everyone. That's the other thing. I mean, everyone can achieve it, but it's just a matter of applying.
Applying, yeah. It's a matter of what's important to me, right? Do I want to feel at peace, or do I want to be right? One wants to be right and at peace. And that is obviously what we would call a win-win situation. In situations, however, where the being right part is impossible, either because it happened in the past or it's something that may happen in the future, like the outcome of a terminal disease or something, one has to decide, you know, let me focus on what I still have and what is still good in my life, or let me focus at what is it that I want to achieve. If it's realistic, go for it, by all means. If it is not realistic anymore, then one needs to find in themselves the desire to put the ego secondary to the heart, for lack of a better analogy. It's a choice, like you said. Yeah, it's a choice.
Yeah, I mean, Gabriel, if we go back a couple steps back, one is, the analogy we talked about FM and AM, I think it'd be nice to clarify that for the folks.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. And then we'll talk about universe, and maybe we'll talk about the energy, you know.
Yes.
Concept.
So very good. So both the FM and the AM frequencies are frequencies, which means they are an electromagnetic field. The same goes for the thinking process. The process of thinking is not a physical one, it's an electromagnetic one. And as such, it has different levels of frequency, which we have the choice usually of tapping into based on what is it that we choose to do. Some people decide to consciously go one way, other people decide to subconsciously go the other way, or unconsciously go the other way. And some people, what we call the enlightened ones, go choose one frequency over the other based on inspiration, right? The supraconscious. So the prophets and such, right? So I cannot find love if I am hateful, distrustful, or indifferent. I just cannot. It's even if love finds me, I'm not going to recognize it, because I'm not at that frequency of love where I can recognize love. And vice versa, if I want to love and I'm at the love level, when hatred comes my way, I'm not going to recognize it in terms of paying attention to it. Yes, it's going to be there. Yes, I'm going to observe it. At the same time, I'm not going to recognize it. In counseling, there is a big distinction between approving and accepting. We assume that I have to accept only that which I approve. And that's because of my ego, yeah, wanting to be right. In reality, I can certainly accept the reality without approving it. If I detach from my ego and I say, well, what are the facts? What are those which are not part of what I think should be? And so it's important to understand that distinction, that I am sowing what I'm going to reap. I cannot have it both ways. I really cannot. And that's very important. So thank you, Hurricane, for bringing that FMAM analogy into discussion again.
Yeah, no, it's a cool thing, because again, we're talking about frequencies and energies, and you know, we do actually I in my personal life, I always try to go on the positive vibe or positive energy. And but you do have the opposites, right? You have people that are too positive that it's so contagious. And mm-hmm. you feel that vibe. When you're around them, you can get that excitement. So that energy field is real. As much as we might not pay attention to it, physically, but it does exist. It projects. And, I had a different guest and we talked about yawning. And yawning is contagious too. I mean, you start and everybody else starts. Laughing is the same thing. You laugh, everybody starts laughing, right? But that's energy that's being, transmitted. And we don't pay attention to it in this light. We just laugh about it. Oh, that's laughing. Let's all laugh out, right? But it's been actually proven that it's medicine, for example, right? I mean, we can say it's a great medicine, right?
Yes, yes. And laughter is a phenomenal medicine. Why? Because especially it makes us laugh from the diaphragm. And when we laugh from the diaphragm, it infuses through the motion of the muscles, right? The belly laughter, it creates essentially shocks of oxygen within the body. So that's why laughter, like you said, is the best medicine because it oxygenates the body.
It's a unique concept, but it works, and then when you're positive, it's contagious. And then on the flip side, to your point, there are people that are so negative and subconsciously, unconsciously, or actively conscious, they just have that supra negative stuff, which in the religious world, we probably call it demonic or satanic.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, there is that energy as well. And they both can collide and it's dangerous.
Yes, yes. And they are there. And the beauty in conscious thinking is that I know what I'm thinking, talking and doing and why. And that's because I'm aware. A lot of people become aware by meditation, by focusing. And the first question is really to ask myself, am I looking at the world as something to be afraid of, or am I looking at the world as a beautiful opportunity? As an immigrant, when people come to the States with two suitcases and 5 years later, they have learned the language, they have found a job, they have started the saving money and so forth, is because they look at America as an opportunity. Then we have individuals born in America and raised here who, because of the generational learned helplessness mentality for one reason or another, they look at America as being a place of segregation, of hatred, of injustices. It's the same America, it's the same society. And as long as there are laws protecting the individual, provided that the individual is also responsible, pretty much the same way, then America is the same. It's objective, it's neutral, until one gives it meaning. So this is an example, right? Why is it that so many immigrants come and within one generation, they have homes, jobs, when other individuals here who didn't have to go through the process of learning a language, customs and so forth, they stagnate, right? It goes back to...
Well, it's the opportunity. It's how you see the world, right? Cup half full, half empty, right? The mindset. We can look at the same picture and just see two different things. And that's exactly what it is. When I can relate to that. I'm an immigrant and, same thing. I mean, I had my dream and, I worked towards my dream and in no time I was able to do it because I saw every opportunity. I still see opportunities. All right. And there are people that will take it for granted because they just, that's not, then first of all, they haven't known different. That's the other thing. They just know this reality. And when you live in maybe in a different country and whether through war or through other type of, concepts, you tend to have a different outlook and also feel as well as respect for things, as little as they are. Some people take those things for granted. I mean, people that live in a desert and on some sub-African countries, for example, with no light or electricity, what the hell? I mean, they come in here like they will appreciate light, right? It's a simple example. And it's sad because when Sandy hit in New York and Jersey a couple of years back, we've realized how vulnerable we were as Americans in general because we are not used to not electricity and not having a fridge and a freezer. So stuff that is just basic, we were literally starving without it, right? We're dying out. And that's really sometimes when you realize Well, someone that actually didn't have all that stuff would appreciate it and can also survive it. That's the difference. They will adapt, they will persevere, and they'll be resilient. And someone who hasn't, oh my God, the world just crumbled. I mean, a generational analogy would be taking a phone from our kids.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
my word. Yeah. You know, what happened before those phones? What happened before internet? We did live. I mean, we had a good life, right? So
yes.
It's all a matter of perspective. So
it's all a matter of perspective. You're absolutely correct. So the distinction in this regard, what makes me be able to recalibrate my thinking from subconscious or unconscious to the conscious, or if you will, to even the supraconscious, is meditation. So the saying is that when I pray, is I'm communicating with God. When I meditate, is I'm communicating with me. So these are two important distinctions, this idea about awareness of mind and body. And I need to ask myself how I look at the world. Then the question is, why am I looking at the world the way it is? Is it really my reality, or is it something that I think are aspects of it which fit my experiences and my belief system, and I'm going with that, whether it be positive or negative. If I like where I am, very good. If I don't like where I am, that's where I need to change my belief system into looking at the world A, as a gift, not as a given. And in so doing, then I am communicating with those entities outside me, visible and invisible, physical or spiritual, a sense of gratitude because I am part of you, right? And in conjunction with my responsibility as an individual, my responsibilities and rights, in combination with a sense of gratitude for the greater things, then that's what's going to lead one to look at the life completely, both with a sense of gratitude and a sense of responsibility and appreciation for his or her life. That would be my two cents on that perspective. What do you think?
That's more than two cents. I think that's a lot more valuable than we can quantify. I mean, and then some of this concept or some of these concepts that you've mentioned today, I mean, I think obviously it would take days, maybe a few books to actually even comprehend most of it. I mean, we try to make some light and give some analogies. But there's more to this. I mean, you know, we talked about, you mentioned universe and energy. I mean, from a physics, you know, and that's the other thing, like, you know, the connection between the spiritual world, the religion, the science, and we talked about that last time, is very intricate. And most people may not even put them together, but they can all collide, they can all, you know, coexist and complete one the other. And
yes,
I have this joke, well, not a joke, I've had this conversation many times about, you know, if you are a physicist, you know, or you're in physics, you would know one thing, that it's all about electrons and protons and atoms and stuff, right? But then if anyone have ever seen an atom, it's a bunch of space, it's 90% empty, it's just a couple of electrons floating around a proton, right? So when you think about it, everything that is in this universe is made of electrons and protons, and so it's really 90% empty. So how do we even, you know, conceive material stuff? So that gets a long discussion, and we get deeper on that one, and then we go into the science and the religion, and we can lose people today.
No, actually, you're right, because you ask a very pertinent question. What's there which creates this? And what's there which creates this is force, energy. At the core of who we are as human beings is vibration. It's not the matter, it's vibration. Matter without vibration is dead matter. Matter, I mean, you can mummify, right? Lenin is mummified, Evita Peron is mummified, pharaohs are mummified, they are dead, right? Without the vibration of life, which then gives life to the matter, we are nothing. So that's the main core, really, of why we should be grateful for. It's a gift, a day-by-day gift, if you will. That sense of understanding is necessary to be grateful for everything in our lives, the starting point. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, I mean, some people would considered a philosophy and maybe debate it. Some people, you know, have deniability on in terms of.
It was so until the 1900s when quantum physics came about, and it was proven scientifically that the electromagnetic field not only is there, just like electricity, it is also an intelligent electromagnetic field, and on the top of it is also a loving, intelligent electromagnetic field, a creative one. So it's proven scientifically. At this point, ever since the 1900s, only if the skeptics, all they have to do is go into the quantum physics literature and with the mathematical mind, the scientist mind, absolutely. In fact, a lot of the Nobel Prize winners in what we call solid sciences gave deference to this creative energy force, loving intelligence. The record is really, really, really long. And these are Nobel Prize winners in sciences, chemistry and physics and so forth, mathematics. So it is not it's not anecdotal. It's really scientifically proven, this intelligent, creative, loving electromagnetic force of which we are part and to which we will be going when we expire, right?
It's funny you said that, because we started the conversation about the mind and the conscious, non-conscious, but, you know, even the brain, I mean, technically we see it as matter, but it's all electrical signals. Our nervous system is all electrical stuff. And, you know, there's chemical reaction that converts into electrical signal, and that's where the synapses and the message goes to your brain, and it's all fired up. When you look at a brain, you know, an electronic version of it, like, you know, when you see all the synapses firing, you know, electrical signal, I mean, it's pretty powerful. We are conducted, you know, energy and electricity. And so, and thus physics, thus, you know, energy that is beyond. And so then we go into the spiritual world, and now we're talking about souls, or the ghosts in the machine. And then now, how do you define that? And we can talk about computers and link them back to that. I mean, we could go crazy with this topic right now. I mean, I know we're coming about, you know, the end of today's show, but we can certainly catch on this for the next few weeks. And there's got to be some more interesting discussion, I think, about this.
Yes, thank you. So, yeah, I would just suggest The Power of Intention, a book by Wayne Dyer. One can find his lectures on YouTube. Just type The Power of Intention, Wayne Dyer. And what he says there is that an intention is an intelligent tension. And that says it all, really. What is my intelligent intention for today? Is it to seek occasions to get offended? Is it to seek occasions to be happy, in harmony, to be serene? Because based on that intelligent tension, I'm going to seek, find, and recognize the like of it. And I'm going to certainly accept without necessarily approving the opposite of it, for better or worse.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, I mean, I've never heard that broke the breakdown, but really as simple as that. I'm telling you, like, you're making it sound so sweet and easy, which we can comprehend easily. So thank you for that. But it's deep stuff. I mean, it's really, you know, it gives you an opportunity to ponder and wonder and really think and reflect. And I think those are all key elements. And most of us, we kind of live our lives without doing that. We talked the last time, you and I, about wandering, you know, and pondering in this universe, just looking at the universe, how it all comes in play. I mean, you can't, there's just so much power to it. It's not even funny. I mean, we can talk hours, and there are thousands of books, if not millions of books out there about all this. And it's pretty cool. I mean, as far as I know, and I believe, it's we owe it to ourselves to learn more about these things and at least dive in and get into it. You know, whether we accept some of the facts or not, at least know. I mean, knowledge is power, so I think that's important. And I think if there's a message from our shows, is that we want to convey that to our audiences, and hopefully they'll get some action from it.
Exactly. And to use a quote, one of my favorite superb poets and philosophers, Rumi, Persian poet Rumi, 1300s, he wrote a poem, and he ended with, "Why go through life like a dead fish in this ocean of love created by God or universe? It's a choice. We can be like the dead fish, or we can be appreciative and grateful. The ocean of love is there, whether we accept it, approve it, or none of the above."
Well, Gabriel, with those words of wisdom, we're going to close our show today. So thank you for another yet exciting hour. Look forward to the next one next week, Friday at 7 p.m. And then we'll tell you when the next show will be. So, Gabriel, thank you for joining us today. For our listeners and audience watching, thank you for watching on the iHealth channel, listening on iHealth Radio. This has been the Garrison Hour. And so look forward for another few hours, if not many, and a lot more deep. And like I said, it's a journey. So take the journey, and it will be worth listening in, tuning in, and watching. That being said, Hurricane H here, and we will talk soon. Bye now.
Thank you. Thank you.
As always, trying to get some of this action.